Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest this hour never set out to be a storyteller, but it turns out storytelling is the only job she's ever had. She likes to say that every story I tell is true, except for the parts that I make up. And isn't that a great recipe for a story? An army brat, her stories come from the places she's lived all over the world and the folklore she's collected along the way. Today, she is an award-winning and internationally known master storyteller and author, performing for audiences of all ages for over 36 years and conducting workshops to pass her skill on to others. We're approaching the fall and early winter holiday season, a time in which stories have always played a role, from spooky ghost stories at Halloween to the family stories we tell around the Thanksgiving table and at Christmas. So we thought this an opportune time to hear from a master storyteller and to have her share some tips on how you can enliven your storytelling this holiday season and more. I've been talking about Donna Washington, and she joins us for the hour. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Mike. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, welcome. I would think that most people associate storytelling with kids, adults telling stories telling stories to kids because that's how kids learn. But you also tell stories to adults. So talk about the appeal and the function of storytelling.
Well, you know, it's what's really funny. I just was at the Sumter Opera House in Sumter, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Friday night. And we had standing room only crowd and did ghost stories for adults. It's really creepy, really, you know, too much fun, make you jump, make you scream. And after it was over, one of the women who'd come said, "Can I ask you something?" And I said, "Sure, go on." She said, "Now that we have all these true crime podcasts, do you think it's hard to engage adults with storytelling?" And I said, "Do you like true crime podcasts?" She goes, "Oh yeah, I love them. I listen to them all the time." I said, "Did you have trouble engaging with me?" She said, "No."
Okay, you've answered your own question.
So the thing about it is that we are hardwired for stories. Like the way that we communicate with each other, looking at someone, watching their facial expressions, listening to the way their voice is, you know, the range going up and down, all of that is part of how we just normally communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. We're hardwired for that. So stories, no matter what age you are, they grip you in a way that lots of other things can't. And nobody expects it. That's why I think it's interesting.
I was going to ask you about that, because storytelling goes back to the beginnings of time, it's always been a form of education and a form of entertainment. And in the olden days, when there were no movies, there was no television, there was no radio, when theater was something that took place in big cities, maybe, the only form of entertainment was storytelling. But today we do have all these other options. But you're telling me, and you just said it, storytelling still holds a place in people's minds and hearts.
And people are always amazed by it. You know, a lot of the people that came last Friday, they came because they support the Opera House, they came because they have season tickets, they came for all different kinds of reasons. But all of them left going, "I've never seen anything like that before." Some of them, of course, came because either they knew me or they had seen storytelling before, but a lot of them had never seen a professional storyteller. And they were like, "Okay, what's this gonna be?" And they just had a fabulous time. So, and I've also had the experience of, you know, someone who's heard a storyteller who's not a professional, you know, someone who's just telling stories and come to me and say, "You know, I know what storytelling is, and I really like what you did. That wasn't storytelling," which I also think is kind of funny.
Meaning what, so, do you think? That, well, if it wasn't storytelling to them, what did they think it was?
they've been dragged along. I've heard storytellers before, but when you hear someone who is actually like practiced this is like it's an art form. It's like the difference between, you know, someone who likes to dance and someone who's a professional dancer, someone who's been trained to dance. It's a different thing. Everybody can tell stories, but professional storytellers are people who have worked that craft. So it's just a different experience.
I don't know how many professional storytellers there are in the world. I would think not that many. So you're in rarefied company. So how did you develop that skill?
I went to Northwestern University to study law, pre-law, and I was there for like, I don't know, 3 days, and I thought, I don't know how I feel about this. And then I saw the theater kids, they were doing some kind of the freshman indoctrination where they're like learning where everything is, and they just look more fun. And I had always done a lot of theater, and I had always done a lot of public speaking. And this is why I thought I should be a lawyer, because I love the public speaking. So I just joined the theater kids and I changed my major, didn't tell my parents till Christmas. But they were okay with it. And so I was in the theater department for 2 years, and I was in a very classical program. And I just didn't see myself being Vanya in, you know, the chair, like Three Sisters or anything like that. And I thought, well, maybe I'm just not cut out to be in the theater. And back in the 80s, there just weren't a lot of cross racial casting. So I just felt like how many, revivals of Raising the Sun am I going to do? So I went home. I took a semester off, and my mother said, you have to apply. You have to audition for theater. And if while you're home. So I did. I played Mother Goose in a touring theater. And I thought, if I can play Mother Goose, I can do anything. I went back to school. I got cast in a piece of theater where I had to pretend to be a storyteller. And the person who cast it, she was getting her master's degree and she needed people to take a class. And she wasn't sure anyone would sign up for it. So she cast a show, made the cast take the class. And it was a class on storytelling. And the joke was on me because I made the transition. In that class, I really sort of came into storytelling, but I was the only one who didn't realize it. So after the show is over, this professor named Reeves Collins sort of stopped me in the hallway and he said, you are a storyteller. And I was 20 nothing. So I said, okay. And then he spent the next 2 years turning me into a storyteller. He signed me up for graduate classes. I was like a little fresh, like undergrad. He signed me up for grad classes. He just stopped me in the hall. You have to take these two classes. I don't care what else you need to graduate. So I showed up for my first day and all these old people, they were in their 30s. All these old people in the graduate program. And I was sitting there, and everyone had to go around and explain why they were taking this storytelling class. And they all had reasons. Like one of them was getting a degree and he was doing multimedia and he wanted to learn more about storytelling. And I thought, what am I going to say? He got to me, and before I could say anything, he said, oh, that's Donna. She's just here to learn stories. She's already a storyteller. And then the next person went. So he really just was like pushing this. And then at one point, my senior year, he said, I'm doing a show. Come do like, part of it, and I'll give you half the cash. And I was like, okay, I'm broke college kid. 20 bucks is 20 bucks. So I show up and I do like 10 minutes worth of storytelling. And I got $250. And I thought, you could make a living doing this.
Well,
By the time I graduated, I had done some, I was doing some research papers my senior year, and I traded storytelling with the kids for access to them for my research. So they were answering questions for me and doing things like that, and I was using them in one of my papers. And by the time I graduated, all of these schools in the area knew I was a storyteller and started hiring me almost immediately. So I've never done anything else.
do you consider yourself lucky? Because it seems to me a lot of people have ambitions to go into theater because they want to be an actor and they want to be a working actor, and that means you don't necessarily have to be a star, but you work and you get paid for it regularly. But that doesn't happen to a lot of people. A lot of people have to drop out because they're not getting hired. They're not getting the they're getting they go into the auditions, but they're not getting the parts, and so they drop out. If you're going to be a professional storyteller, those jobs are even fewer and farther between, and really up to you entirely, it seems to me, correct?
The thing I'd say about being, because you're an independent artist, that's
Right.
the first. So you're no one is, you don't have any ladder to climb other than the one you build, and the only person chasing you is you. So you have to be willing to do all the PR. You have to be willing to do the reach out. You have to, at least in my situation, I had to write well enough to write my own copy for different things. I had to figure out where grants could be found, and nothing I did in school prepared me for that. So every step of the way, I was also very lucky. I was living in Evanston, Illinois, and there were like, I don't know, 15 people who either dabbled in or did storytelling. Jim May, who is still with us, who is a professional teller. Sid Lieberman, who had been an English teacher for a really long time and became a professional teller. Beth Horner, who is a professional teller. There was just a whole bunch of them right on site. And they were really happy to welcome a kid into the into the ranks of storytelling, because a lot of storytellers, by the time they start the process of going into this, are in their sometimes 40s, 50s. I was 20. So I got a lot of help from people that just paid it forward. And before I knew it, this is just what I did. It's the thing that helped me become an author. I mean, I always thought I wanted to write books, but I thought, oh, I'll need to be like much older before I learn, before I do that. That wasn't the case. I stumbled into writing because of storytelling. So I have built this really amazing, fun life. Not always easy, because you are really chasing yourself.
I should have mentioned you have about I think six or seven children's books to your credit, 11 CDs of story of storytelling, and our guest today is Donna Washington, an author, professional storyteller, a rare bird. This morning on WFAE's Charlotte Talks, it has been said of you, excuse me, that you are a walking Disney movie, and you've been told by your audiences that you were better than television. Oh my gosh. When you think about all the things that go into making up a successful television show or a movie, and then you strip all of that away, there's no other people, there's no set, there are no costumes, no special effects, just you. As you develop your craft, as you've written stories, as you have performed those stories or told those stories, what have you learned about the art and what works to captivate audiences?
Well, as I said before, it's a primal thing. Storytelling is really just part of us. But in terms of being a professional storyteller, one of the things that I really encourage people, and this is like a really key thing, don't move. You can't fill up the space around you. You're just one person. But if you don't move, the audience will fill up the space. The goal of storytelling, it's going to be an interesting one, is that you personally disappear and this audience is just watching a story. So I don't know what images will actually scare you, but you do. And if I give you enough license, you give yourself the best possible story you could ever have. So here's an example of what that looks like.
You have about 30 seconds. You want to do it in 30 seconds? Can you do it in 30
Yes.
seconds? Okay,
No,
go
I
ahead.
can't do
You can't do it in
it.
30 seconds. Okay, well, we'll come back to that in a moment. Donna Washington is a professional storyteller. She was to have been at the Carolina Theater, which is why we booked her, but that performance has been postponed. But nonetheless, we're going to spend the hour talking to her as we head toward Halloween and the storytelling time of year that we all engage in. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, home ownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcharlotteregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Donna Washington, a professional storyteller. As I say, a rare bird. You were saying you have said that the key to it when you're up on stage in front of people and telling them stories for you as the storyteller, not to move. Yeah. Be still and let the audience fill the space. Talk about how that works.
Well, the first time I realized that this was happening was actually really early on in my career, because I don't move. I stand in one spot with the microphone, and I started going to libraries, and then I would be asked back. And I was always surprised because they would give me a headset. Mm-hmm. And I would say, why do you, I have this big hair. And they would say, oh, it doesn't, they don't fit on my head very well. You know, it's like, and they said, well, because you run all over the stage. And I thought, ah, they must be confusing me with some other performer that they have coming in. And then I did a show, a horrible audience, K through five. you would never read the same books at the kindergarten as you would to the fifth grader. You would never do it. And yet sometimes people are like, it's just stories. And they stick them all in there together. So I'm trying to find stories that won't bore the older kids, but won't make the little kids so squirmy that they disrupt everything. And I'm telling a story called The Squeaky Door, which is a ridiculous story about a grandmother who puts a little boy in bed, and then she closes the door, goes, boom, and then he screams. Then she puts a cat in the bed, and then she closes the door, the cat goes off, the boy goes off. Then she puts the dog in the bed, she closes the door, the dog goes off, the cat goes off, the boy goes off. And then she puts the goat in the bed, and the horse in the bed, and the cow in the bed, and then the bed breaks. And so she's running back and forth the barn to get all these animals. So the show is over, and then I have, about 35 minutes later, I have an in-service with a lot of the teachers from District 65, which is in Evanston, and they all show up and they're sitting in there, and I'm like 23. So I'm feeling a little pressured anyway, right? I'm a professional, I'm gonna do this. And the first person raises a hand and said, we just wanna say, we thought it was hysterical watching you run all over the stage. And I said, I didn't move. Oh no, we saw you. You were running back and forth to the barn. And I was like, but there was no barn on the stage. No, we saw you. It's like, I didn't, we saw, I was like, did you see me dragging the microphone back? No, they hadn't seen that.
Wow.
Was there a barn actually on the stage? No, there hadn't been one. Could you hear me the entire time? Yes. And I said, that's because I didn't move. More of them. We saw you. And then they all started laughing. They did not believe me.
Wow.
If a judge had come in and a jury and lawyers, I would have been found guilty of moving.
That's the power of imagination. I think that's why radio drama worked so well, because there were no pictures. Everything was in your mind. We used to call it theater of the mind, which is the same thing here. And you tell a story called Red, Red Lips. And that is, I think, the moral to that story, that your imagination can be more vivid than real life.
Yes. And that is a great story to tell to kids, about this little kid who's terrified of the dark. And he keeps seeing this woman at his window. And the refrain is, she's got black, black hair and green, green skin and red, red lips and long red fingernails. And at the end, she's not scary at all. I won't give it away. You have to look at it online. But at the end, she's not terribly scary at all. And kids love that story. And I had a mother email me, and she said, my daughter, she was at the storytelling event. She saw that story, and she's about four. And every night, she's scared to go up the stairs in one particular spot because it's really dark. And she got to the edge of it, and she stared, and she went, and then she just walked up the stairs.
That's from that story.
that's from the story. And her mother was like, it just gave her the power to walk up the stairs. And I have to say, the years I have been doing this, it is a lot of work and it's exhausting many times. But those are the stories of people who use the storytelling to get through something, or it changed their life in some way, or it gave them just a moment of being able to face something. It's the reason I keep doing this. Even at times when I think, really, I could be doing something else. The amount of power that a story can have to shape someone's life, even after just encountering me once.
Where do the stories come from, and what makes for a good story?
Well, I'm a huge proponent of folklore. because it exists because it's about people. It's about the struggles that we have been going through. And whether it's ancient Egypt or it's 2025, humans have the same needs. We want to be safe. We want the people we love to be safe. We want to have enough to be okay. We want to have shelter. The story, and we don't want people to take advantage of us, and we don't want to be made a fool. The stories are pretty basic for what people want and what people need. So they've always been the same. So stories, even if they're dressed up in all kinds of interesting stuff, as long as they're about really basal human needs, people can connect to them. And we need people to reinforce that we're okay, that we're going to be okay, that the wolf's not going to come in and eat us all. And if he does come and eat us all, somebody will avenge us. We need heroes, right? We still need heroes.
You mentioned folklore. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. So that's what I'm much more into. But personal narratives also work as long, again, as they have that basal connection, the story about ourself that's about everyone else. Because when you are telling stories, you're never telling stories about yourself. It has to be about the audience.
So you mentioned folklore. You also, I understand, tell stories out of Greek mythology. You share African American folk tales. You tell spooky stories, apropos for this time of year, and you tell what has been described as racy stories for adults. But is what you've just been talking about, is that the thread that runs through all of these stories?
Yes. Yeah. They have to be about the listeners. It has to be something universal that will capture people. Because at the end of the day, everything needs to be about you. It's not about me, it's about you. So if you are listening to the story and you're coming up with your own images, the people in your life, the things that are important to you, situations that you've had, then you'll listen. You don't know me. You don't know my cousin Frank. If cousin Frank is so outside of the world that you have no way to communicate with his idea, then he means nothing to you. But if I say to you, how many of you have an uncle who says crazy things to you? Anyone got one of those? Or if you've got a relative who used to just tell you nutty things when you were a kid, anyone got something like that? And so a lot of adults are like, yeah, there was someone like that in my life. And then I say, my cousin Frank was like that. Then you have a way to understand what I'm talking about. If I just start talking about Cousin Frank without explaining who he is and how you have met him somewhere in your travels, he doesn't mean anything. So,
I was going to say that we're all storytellers, and we've all grown up hearing stories being told to us, mostly as kids. And as I said at the very beginning, and I could be really wrong about this, but most people probably associate storytellers with people who tell stories to children. But you tell stories to adults, and adults come to your shows to watch you tell stories. And as you mentioned earlier in this conversation, for most of them, it's probably the first time they've ever seen a storyteller as an adult talking to another adult or adults in the room. Why do they come? What do they think they're going to experience? And how long, is there a moment when you know, I've got them, I've won them over, they get it?
I think sometimes people come because they're curious, right? They've not had one before. Sometimes they come because it's the description. If you haven't had stories since you were in camp, this would be a thing to come do. Sometimes they're on dates and they want to take their date somewhere interesting or different. Sometimes they just want a new experience, and sometimes they've seen a storyteller or they've heard of it. And then some people come because they know what it is or they've seen me perform before. So, it runs the spectrum. I didn't know what it was. I just bought a ticket. I was curious.
So we know the stories that are, well, we know the broad strokes of stories that kids like to hear. I'm just curious about what adults seem to latch on to. And you have one, I think, called, is it called Boot Hag? Is that what it's
The
called? Oh,
boot.
Boo Hag.
So you see, you ask like when I know that I have them. So have you ever given a speech before and they say, start with a joke? Right. The reason why you start with a joke is because you want everyone to create a communal experience. You want everyone to laugh at the same thing, and it makes us feel like we're part of one event. whatever happened outside, whatever happened before they walked into that room, the joke sort of solidifies we are now a community. Storytelling is the same thing, where usually I explain who I am and I say, I've been doing this for 38 years or 39 years or whatever it is. And they go, oh, okay, so they're relaxed. Okay, now do something. And then I start asking questions. How many of you remember being a kid and being really scared of something? Oh, yeah. So now you're not just a group of people, you're a group of people on the same boat. And it takes about 45 seconds to a minute to create that community if you ask the right questions, because you're preparing them for the thing we're about to go through. So what kind of stories do I tell? This one is called The Boo Hag. And there's a lot of history behind it, which I usually introduce before I tell it. And it's an African-American story, a Gullah witch who was put together from Africa and African-European stories. And she ended up becoming this creepy thing. So this is from The Boo Hag. And it's the moment when she's taking off her skin. And it looks like this. Now, that woman told Aaron not to look, but you know how it is, right? If someone tells you not to look at something, don't you want to look at it? So he laid back in his chair and opened one of his eyes. Maggie was over there in the corner. She'd taken out the spinning wheel, and she lifted her finger up into the light, and she reached underneath her fingernail, and she began picking and picking until she got out a strand of her skin. And she stuck it in the spinning wheel, and she started spinning that wheel, and her skin began to unravel. It unraveled up her finger. It unraveled down her hand. It unraveled down her arm. And the entire time it was coming off, she was saying, spin, spin, spin all skin. Spin, spin, spin off skin. And that's from The Boo Hag.
Oh, my. See, part of it is the way you tell the story, your voice, etc. But for people who are not watching us on Facebook Live, they did not see your face. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the storytelling trick, too. I read that when you tell stories to adults, they often tell you afterward that they felt like a child again. But you have a response that gives that feeling a slightly different perspective. And that response is, no, you felt like an adult who didn't know you could feel like a child. A completely different thing. But isn't that fun?
Yeah, it is. And people love it. They love it. It's fun. It is so much fun. If you have never seen a professional storyteller and you are an adult, go find one. There are guilds where you live. There are festivals somewhere where you live. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guilds have open nights. And you're in Charlotte. I know you have a storytelling guild up there. Go see storytellers. It is amazing. You won't be sorry you did it.
You also say that sharing stories is important to create connection in a time when people may get pulled apart and may often, more often than they get pulled together. So, and we certainly live right now in an incredibly divisive time with the highly polarized individuals on one side of the divide or the other. We seem to have lost the thread of the American story. Does storytelling have a role to play in knitting that story back together?
Well, so here's the thing about stories. Our brains don't care if they're true. They just care if you feel like they're true. The American story that we have told is in two or three different pieces. There's the traditional one, right? Where we're you know, melting pot. We all came from different places and we pull together and we make America wonderful. We make it work. That's the one I grew up with. There's another story in America where Europeans showed up here, took everything, and then proceeded to use everybody else to build America. There's another story where Europeans showed up and there was nobody here and they built everything and now everyone's coming to take it. Now, if you, depending on which version of that story
Yeah.
you truly believe, will depend on where you stand. So, yes, there is a way to use stories to bring people together. There are elements of each of those stories that are common in the stories that we tell. Changing someone's viewpoint of a story is really hard when you're talking about, big things like a country and patriotism and where do you stand? Because people hold on to their stories because their stories tell them what's real. So this is not a question of professional storytelling. This is a question about how people view their own stories. For instance, like the when George Bush the second W was running for office, he was calling himself a self-made man. He came from a really rich family that basically
Yeah.
buy anything, right? But he did it himself. And there were people going, yeah, he's a self-made man. And so then you ask, what does that mean to you? But that's the story. Our politics is all about story. And what's kind of crazy to me right now, we have had points in our history where we really did have actual things to fight about. Whether you would enslave an entire group of people or whether an entire group of women could vote or not. I mean, those are things people might fight about. What are we really upset about right now? Just the story. We are upset because we're telling different stories. I mean, that's the thing that I find kind of nutty. And because the people in charge believe a very particular story, like Tylenol will give you autism, they're making choices that make things tricky based on the stories they truly fundamentally believe,
And
even if
as you
those stories aren't
say,
in.
it doesn't matter to some people whether the story is true or not. We have to, which is dangerous. We have to take a break. We're coming right back with more. Our guest today is Donna Washington. She is an author and a professional storyteller, and we'll talk about some of the books that she has written over the course of time and get into some tongue twisters as well. Stay with us.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the Gambrill Center at Queens, presenting Earthwise, a public series exploring our connection to nature through science, film, art, literature, and lived stories, part of their Connected Campus program. More at gambrillcenter.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Donna Washington. She is a professional storyteller and author. I want to get into some how you tell stories to different age groups of children in a moment. But you've also written stories for books. I think six children's books, Little Rabbit's Kwanzaa, A Pride of African Tales, The Story of Kwanzaa, A Big Spooky House, Boo Stew, and your latest, which is called Prak Fills, P-R-A-K, Fills. Are these books compilations of the stories that you tell, or are these stories that, for whatever reason, lend themselves better to print?
Almost all of them are stories I have told in the past and that have ended up in print. And when I first started working with writing these stories out, I was concerned that they would get stuck. Because when I can tell them, kids can come up with their own stuff. But if they become illustrated books, then I feel like they're stuck on the page. And I've worked with great editors and illustrators to help that not feel that way and have people be able to find ways to play with the stories despite the fact that they are written in stone, as it would be. And in almost all of the books I've written, I have a note at the front saying, you have my permission to tell this story. Because, not the more, no, you don't reprint it and rebind it, but if you want to tell it out loud, go for it. Because I really feel strongly that picture books should be interactive. They should be stories that you read out loud with someone. You guys can take parts. So the character should be clear enough to where the kid or the person who's reading it can do voices and onomatopoeia, and that there's enough repetition to where if the young person who's listening to the story could be one of the characters and use their voices. I strongly believe that picture book should be like that.
One of the ways, well, the way you make a living at storytelling is traveling the country and in fact the world, telling stories to audiences of all ages. And you have stories for pre-K through second grade kids. You have stories for children who are slightly older. You have stories for middle school students. I can't believe this. This is really amazing to me that you have stories for high schoolers, which I do want to talk about. But how do the stories and the style of the stories and the storytelling change, if they change at all, as you go through these various age groups?
Gosh. So quick. Pre-K through second grade stories are built for pre-literacy, for helping kids learn how stories are put together. They're fun, they're almost completely participatory. By the end of the story, the audience can do the entire thing with me.
Oh,
And some of
wow.
the stories are long, right? But and they're built to help them remember. Third through fifth grade, those stories are mostly about choices, a lot of fables, a lot of trickster stories. Middle school stories, sixth grade stories are different from seventh grade, which are different from eighth. Sixth grade stories are about surviving sixth grade. People bullying you and calling you names and trying to figure out who you are. And then the seventh grade stories, seventh graders get really big and then they think they're grown. So the stories are about, no, you're still a kid. And then the eighth graders start sniffing at each other, but they have no jobs and they can't drive. So the stories for eighth grade are about respecting each other. High school students, a lot of those stories run the gamut. If I'm doing stories where I'm explaining what I do as a storyteller, I'll tell different kinds of stories. If I'm talking about the fact that, a lot of them are under pressure, like I get invited into like high stakes high schools. They're under pressure. Their parents want them to be doctors and lawyers. And so I tell the story of how I became a storyteller. Telling, fables and folklore in it, and explain that at some point, the only person you have to face in the mirror is yourself. So, as much as, your parents, they're lovely. I hope that, you must go down the roads that you have to go down, but understand you have to live with the choices that you've
Yeah.
made.
Who told you this? I mean, as you talk about how you tailor these stories to these different age groups, and you are focusing on things that are important to them at that stage of their life. For instance, I think it's third through fifth. The stories you tell center on the choices kids make and how you are ultimately responsible for those choices. These are life lessons. Does that add, first of all, who taught you that? Who taught you how to divide those up in those age groups? And secondly, does it put added pressure on you? Because you're not just a performer, you are informing these kids and telling them things about life that come with a certain amount of responsibility on your shoulders.
What happens is you learn this. You learn what. So there are several different pools of this. One is you learn what each group is attracted to as you tell, as you fail, as you succeed. When you walk away, go, how did that work? And why did that work? When I was in school, I studied Piagetian development. So I already had some sense of like how all that stuff works. I did more research about language and literacy as I watched stories transform. Then noticing things like the whole business of people thinking I had been running around and understanding what is going on in the brain. I did a whole lot of study of literacy acquisition and language development, and that influenced how I told stories to little kids. I did a lot of, remember I told you I did research papers with kids in school, and I learned a lot about the different things that they're dealing with. I also remember being in sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade. And also people ask, like, could you come and talk about this? Could you come? Our students are dealing with this. And so I began to develop programming that deals with the various things that teachers were asking for. And I also listened to what students said, because they come up after the show and they have things they want to say about what they just watched. And why they just, their own experiences. So it takes years, at least it took me years and years to develop this. And then I started a blog called Language Literacy and Storytelling. So I have all of this information on that blog about why I make the choices I make and what I'm doing and how I develop things. I think I have one 5-blog series about how I take a story from the page and turn it into a performance piece and all the choices that have to get made in between so that you change it from the language of writing to the language of spoken word.
I'm curious about which of these young people from kindergarten, pre-K through high school are the toughest audience. To me, I'll bet you the high schoolers, because they're grown up, they think they're grown up, and they I would think that they're a tough audience. Are they the toughest audience?
No, actually, because a lot of times, like I said, I do curated groups. So, for instance, they've asked me to come in and talk to their theater groups, or they've asked me to come in and talk to whatever. If I'm coming in to speak to the whole group, a lot of times it's for the fact that I'm a writer, and so I will do one of the pieces I have written that are really specifically targeted to that group. And just like adults who would go, "I've never seen a storyteller, but that was really fun. I'm glad I did that." High school has the same response. They are just as surprised that they are enjoying themselves as the other adults. And I also work with the university kids, same thing.
For high schoolers, you have a collection of stories you tell called Respect the Hags, which are based in folklore, I'm told, but with characters that you have invented that are, as you describe them, really creepy. You have a story about Hansel and Gretel told from Gretel's perspective that you say is creepy. How so?
Well, I've always thought that story should be called Gretel and Hansel because, he got them into it and she actually got them out. And
Ain't that always the case?
she doesn't get out willing. So she basically rocks and tells the story of like this stepmother who, that it starts with, "I knew she wouldn't love us from the second she got there. Because she was cold all the way through her bones." And the story goes on about how she ends up killing this witch who was the only woman who was ever nice to her, taught her how to cook, taught her how to clean, was like, grooming her up. She was going to eat her, but, she didn't know that at the time. So she actually kills the only woman who was nice to her. She gets Hansel out of the cage. And then she realizes that she has learned how to be cold to the bone, but she's also learned how to be hot for life. And she goes home, and it ends with her saying, "She didn't expect me. It was easy because I had learned how to kill the chickens."
You also have a story called for kids called is it called Tally Pogue? Is that
Tailey Po.
hey okay Taily
Tailey Po.
Pogue.
It's a traditional story.
Okay.
And that's another one of those where it's appropriate for kids. Here's a little piece of that one. Hank James was just sitting there stirring his pot. He'd put in old bones and old fruit because he hadn't caught nothing when he was out hunting. And he was just stirring that pot. And as he sat there, he commenced to feeling like something was watching him from the corner of his room. He turned himself around, and there in the corner was something with two little red slits for eyes. He didn't get worried. He just picked up his old hatchet, chop! And whatever it is, sh scuttled out into the swamp, but it didn't get clean away because in the corner he heard tuh, tuh, and he reached over and picked it up, and it was a tail, long, scaly tail. He was going to throw it out the window. And then he realized he didn't have any meat in his cook pot.
I was waiting. I'm waiting for the end. You also delve into tongue twisters. I want to talk about why in a second, but I want to share an example of one that you use that we all know because we've all probably recited it at some point in our lives. This is the famous Peter Piper tongue twister. And just so everybody remembers all the words, here's you saying it very slowly.
Peter Piper picked a peck of purple pickled peppers. A peck of purple pickled peppers Peter Piper picked. If Peter Piper picked a peck of purple pickled peppers, Where's the peck of purple pickled peppers Peter Piper picked?
Okay, so now we've heard all the words. Now here you are again saying it at the speed that most of us have been able to achieve.
Peter Piper picked a peck of purple pickled peppers. A peck of purple pickled peppers Peter Piper picked. If Peter Piper picked a peck of purple pickled peppers, where's the peck of purple pickled peppers Peter Piper picked?
Okay, but you're a virtuoso. You're a professional storyteller, and here you are reciting Peter Piper at what you call the proper speed. deep breath. Here we go.
Peter Piper picked a peck of purple pickled peppers. A peck of purple pickled peppers Peter Piper picked. Peter Piper picked a peck of purple pickled peppers. Was a peck of purple pickled peppers Peter Piper picked.
Now, that's 6 seconds. I know it sounds like we digitally compressed this like the end of an ad for a pharmaceutical where you have to have all the legal jargon in there as quickly as possible, but that's actually real. Can you do that in real life right now? Can you do it right now?
Sure. Okay.
Warm up.
Here we go. You ready?
Yep.
Peter Piper picked a peck of purple pickled peppers. A peck of purple pickled peppers Peter Piper picked. If Peter Piper picked a peck of purple pickled peppers, a peck of purple pickled peppers Peter Piper picked.
That's astounding to me. Now, tell me why you do this. Tell me why this is part of the game here with kids.
One of the things I talk about is literacy. And one of the best ways to promote literacy is to play with language. And tongue twisters are an amazing way to play with language. They get kids to read. They get kids to look at interesting language. And it gets kids to communicate by staring at someone and talking. I recommend they do tongue twister battles. And so I said they should do them with their brothers and sisters, with their parents, with their kids, with their friends, with their teachers, and the principal. So when I work with third through fifth grades particularly, I throw that out there. And some of the teachers are like, bring it on. And some of the teachers are like, no. And the principal's always like, bring it on. So the idea, and then librarians tell me once I leave, the tongue twister books just circulate. So It's just a link to literacy.
How long did it take you to be able to achieve that? I've never heard anybody do it that fast ever in my life. It was astounding to me when I saw it yesterday. When you just did it, it was even more astounding because it was live.
I started doing tongue twisters when I was six, and I've been fascinated them with all my life. So, you know, it's been a while.
Our guest today is the untwisted tongue of Donna Washington. She's a storyteller, professional storyteller, and author this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. You have also helped in something that really is kind of a new form of storytelling for the younger generations or the it's moving into 20 and 30 year olds now. And that I'm talking about video games. You consulted on the design of a video game, which seems to be the latest iteration of storytelling. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. South of Midnight, which was done by a company out of Montreal. And its foundation is in the stories that are in the South. So they flew me up to Montreal. I talked about the different kinds of characters. I told them straight up stories, like an hour and a half to 2 hours of just storytelling that came out of, they particularly wanted creepy stories and creature type stories. Mm-hmm. And I explained why some of the creatures are what they are and hoodoo and voodoo and haints and all of that stuff. And when the video game came out earlier last year, I think they did a really good job of keeping the sense of storytelling in the game. So that was really cool.
Well, one of the things about video games is that the stories can change depending upon what options you achieve or what levels you achieve in the game or which door you want to open or which trail you want to go down. Does that increase the challenge of creating a story for that situation?
That was not my job.
Okay.
My job was to give them context and give them a sense of the world that they were building and give them characters to play with.
So I have less than a minute left. I'm just curious what you would say to somebody who heard this conversation today or who may have come to see you or will come to see you in the future who would like to pursue storytelling as a profession. Aside from saying, I have the market covered, what would you tell them?
Find the local guild, storytelling, and then put your state or your city name in. There will be storytellers there. Find the guilds. The North Carolina Storytelling Guild also exists in CSG storytelling. Hook up with storytellers and start the process. Plus, storytelling is in your area. Look it up, find it, go enjoy.
I hope you're in our area soon. You were to have been at the Carolina Theater. That's been postponed. We'll look forward to it, because let me tell you, when you see Donna Washington in person, it's a revelation. Donna Washington, thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.